This is Viterbi Voices.
Coming to you from the University of Southern California, Viterbi School of Engineering.
We're here to give you the inside scoop on research, classes, student life, and so much more.
All of these shared by students, faculty, alumni, and other members of the USC community.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Viterbi Voices. As usual, I am one of your hosts. My name is Paul Ledesma, Executive Director of Undergraduate Admission here at the USC Viterbi School of Engineering.
Hey, everybody. I am your other co-host. My name is Maya. I'm a current senior studying Industrial and Systems Engineering here at Viterbi.
Well, Maya, it is, well, we just wrapped up the first week of April. Can you believe it?
Yes and no. Also, I feel like this week was very, very long. There was like a month in this week, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like April.
It was a long week. Definitely. I can definitely relate to that. We're in April. April's always nonstop for us in the admission world. We have so many different events going. High school juniors and sometimes sophomores are looking and visiting campus. We've got so many different people here, like just this week alone. I mean, I had like 150 people that I spoke to on Monday. There's another 50 people on Wednesday, another 100 people today on Friday. Plus, we have all of our admitted students visiting. We had our admitted student event on Wednesday, which I think you were at, right? You were there?
I was. It was very fun.
It was a lot of fun seeing everybody. And then this Sunday, our big open house for admitted students, admitted first-year students, I should say. Excuse me. It's just kind of nonstop, which is great. But that does not take away this particular episode. This is one we recorded a little while ago, and so I'm excited to get it to you. This is one of our alumni conversations, and this alumna is a fantastic woman. She has done some really, really cool things. Pretty awesome, interesting, unique, and very exciting career path. Caitlin Sarian. Caitlin is well, let's see. How can we best describe her? She got her bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. She then got her master's degree in engineering management. She originally did not attend USC as a first-year student. She's actually a transfer student, which a lot of people don't necessarily know. And it goes to the point of that we bring in probably around 20% of each incoming class are transfer students every single year, which is a big part of our community here. She has done a lot of work in technical consulting. She's worked at EY. She's worked at DLA Piper. She's worked at then moving on to TikTok because the overwhelming threat of her workload when it came to the work that she started doing was she got very quickly into cybersecurity and consulting specifically on cybersecurity. That's where kind of she made her name at EY and then translated to a bunch of other different agencies, eventually landing at TikTok as the global lead of cybersecurity advocacy and culture. And she pivoted from that as well. I think that you'll hear this conversation. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but you hear this conversation happen where she pivots and pivots and pivots and keeps taking that momentum to do new things. And now she is completely running her own thing. You can see all of her work at cybersecuritygirl.net, cybersecuritygirl.net. I want to give her all the plugs and all of the props here. She is a leading cybersecurity influencer and leader in the community. She is an empowerment advocate for women everywhere and an entrepreneur, and definitely has a ton of different awards. They keep on coming. You can follow her on TikTok. You can follow her on all the different social platforms at Cybersecurity Girl. But I don't want to take too much away from it. Let's jump right into this conversation to get caught up with Caitlin Sarian. And both Maya and I will be on the back end of this to catch up with chit chat and our usual witty banter. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Look at your background.
All fancy, you know.
Very.
Doing what
I'm
I
wearing my USC shirt just for you.
Is that a USC shirt?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Very cool. Thank you very much. Look at that. I'm not wearing, actually, I am wearing a USC shirt, but it's underneath my sweatshirt right now.
Is it cold over there?
No, it's just, it was cool in the morning. It's warming up now, but then my current little office space right now is always the coldest room in the house. So this is a little bit lighter. Well, you're in Miami now, or you're in Florida? Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in Miami now. So it is 75 and sunny. I can't complain.
That's nice. That's really nice. It will eventually get to 70 here in the next like 2 hours, but it woke up this morning, it was 50. So it's a little bit cooler.
Yeah. Too cold for me.
Well, it is good to see you. How's everything?
Good. Crazy busy, but really good.
Awesome. Yeah. I like how we have our matching Shure mics going.
I know. Is that how you say it? I never knew how to say it, so I've just avoided saying it.
I think it's, I don't know. I'm assuming it's Shure. That's how I read it as.
That's what I read it as too, but okay, cool.
What do you think it might be? Now I'm curious. What do you think it might be? Are there different variants of this?
I don't know. It's like McAfee versus McAfee. I feel like there's like a different version, but I have no idea. I just have actively avoided saying the name of it. I don't know why.
Well, now I'm going to be very self-conscious when I think about this particular brand of microphone.
It has to be Shure.
I think so. We will definitely find out as a result of this. But thank you for doing this. And you are no stranger to the podcast world. I think I've seen you on a number of different podcasts out there. So honestly, I yield to you on whatever you want to talk about. But I think for our audience, really, it's why we do this and why we want to bring together a lot of our alums such as yourself is to just tell your story and how you got to USC, how you got to other things that you're doing afterwards. And I think you have a really, really unique story to tell. But I think what might be helpful is to start with a little bit of background of where you're from originally.
Yeah. Are you recording? Like, when do you, is this just like a,
we're already going. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I keep it free and flowing, you know, ABR, always be recording.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I transferred to USC actually, and I never thought I would be an engineer like at all. And this is obviously a long, long time ago. I am older than most people think, which I'm honored to think have people think I'm young, but, back in the day, I didn't see a lot of women engineers. And honestly, even though I absolutely loved math and science and my parents were like really pushing me to like apply to schools as an engineer, all I saw in my head was like a dirty old car mechanic. Like, I really just didn't understand what engineering was at all.
Yeah.
Like at all. And so I actually originally applied my undergraduate as an elementary education major, which like, so they really wanted to teach kids. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. And, I really wanted to do that. And I went to SMU my freshman year, and then I ended up transferring in like a really random way, into engineering. I was somehow put into an intro to mechanical engineering track. And I ended up loving it, and it was really hard, but I think that's why I loved it so much. Like, I secretly love like challenges and problem solving. And so when I started realizing, okay, I'm actually in engineering now, maybe I should transfer to a different school because, I was like, I could probably get a better scholarship and then it could be closer to home. So I ended up applying to only two schools, USC being one of them. And ultimately, even though I was born and raised in LA and most of my high school went to USC, which I actively wanted to avoid, I knew that USC was the best school if I wanted to have a career in Southern California specifically. And also, it's like one of the best engineering schools in the world. And so I decided to go to USC, and I'm not going to lie, transferring to USC was hard. I think any transfer student can kind of understand it's difficult because freshman year, you kind of make your friends, you have all the cliques. And it was difficult, but honestly, I actually think being an engineer made it so much easier because you're all struggling together in the classes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just felt like its own little community of people, and I absolutely loved it. So I did mechanical engineering or aerospace mechanical with a mechanical specialty. And I did that because I actually had no idea what type of engineering I wanted to be. I just knew that I wanted to be like a problem solver and have like the basic understanding. Cause again, I had no idea what engineering honestly was. Like, I just was like, teach me something. Let me like have this standard baseline of like what an engineer is, which is why I did mechanical. And then I was like, I can go from there. Once I get that, standard framework, I'll be able to kind of transfer and do whatever. And immediately I went to USC after my freshman year. So I was a sophomore at USC. And I started going to the career fairs like instantly. You guys have like the best career fairs, by the way. It's incredible. The Trojan Network, it's like, it's mind blowing. I always tell people this when they're like deciding between schools. I'm like, just letting you know, network is everything, which sounds really bad, but they always say network is net worth. And I would like to say that it's wrong, but it's completely accurate.
Yeah.
So I was able to get internships starting my sophomore year, which is unheard of. So I had really incredible internships at USC. The first one was working at Abbott Labs, where they literally like took like 20 of us from USC. They flew us to Chicago and like let us stay in a hotel for like the entire summer and like go work at their at their facility. And it was the best internship I had. It was incredible. You learn so much. And then the next one, I did GE and I went to Dallas and I worked in like alternative energy and board mounted power devices, which has nothing to do with mechanical engineering. But again, engineering is like a glorified problem solver is what I like to say. And then I did Chevron and I did oil and gas like in the oil refinery in Los Angeles in between my senior year and my 4+1. Do you guys still do that? I'm assuming you do.
Yeah, progressive degree program. I don't call it 4+1 because students do it in different time periods. It's additional the progressive time. Degree program. Yeah. People are doing it in less time. Like they're knocking it out. Most people are doing it an extra semester and they're out.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what I did. I think I did like a couple classes in the summer too. But that was another deciding factor of why I wanted to go to USC, because it's like I can get my master's in like 5 years. Like that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Especially in engineering. I mean, master's in engineering is intense. Mm-hmm. And I loved every second of it. So yeah, I did that. And then I decided I had no idea what I wanted to do. Still, I loved every internship, but I couldn't see myself at that place for a long period of time. And to me, I saw my parents and my extended family. They were always at a job for like, 20, 30 plus years. That's like what the norm
You pick
was.
A job, you pick a lane. That's just it. And good luck. We'll see you at the retirement.
Exactly. And so I was like, I love all these places, but I honestly felt like I could get bored after like 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to go into tech consulting, which obviously USC also has like a huge upper hand in like getting into any type of consulting from PwC, EY, all the big four. I think even like the big management companies, management consulting companies now recruit from you guys as well. But I ended up applying. And while I was applying, someone asked me if I would be interested in doing cybersecurity. And I honestly was like, well, they don't know this, but I had to take MATLAB and I was terrible at it. But
meaning like your coding skills were subpar is what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if you can call MATLAB coding. I mean, it technically is. Do they still teach MATLAB?
Yeah. MATLAB's still used in like mechanical engineering, specifically biomedical engineering.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had to take that, which is like a type of coding. And then I was really bad, 2 semesters of it, really bad. I think that was that and oddly physics were like my worst classes. I could barely pass them. But yeah, and then I got into cybersecurity just from there. But I mean, everything Viterbi taught me is just like you're a problem solver. And also like teamwork makes the dream work. Like everyone worked together in classes. It was never like individually, which was great.
What part of LA did you grow up in?
I grew up in Pasadena area.
Pasadena. Okay, great. Yeah. And so Pasadena, and then originally you had looked to go, you wanted to get away. You didn't, because you had so much USC surrounding your life and so many people wanted to go to USC. And it's natural, the idea of like, okay, I'm going to go somewhere else. But you originally went to SMU in Dallas.
Yeah.
What was that like? When you look back on that year at SMU, what were the biggest differences between your holistic or your complete college experience at USC versus that year at another institution? And not speaking bad about SMU, but it is a different place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I will say I loved it. It's my freshman year. So everyone like loves their freshman year. I think it's like a really cool part of your life. I also was a cheerleader.
It's your first year,
there, so
it's your
like
first
very...
year of freedom. Your first year of freedom and you're gone and you're away from home too.
Yeah. And I always wanted to go home. Like I used to tell my parents to like send me to boarding school or because I like did not want to be near the house. High school was not my like glory years. I will say that high school was not fun for me. But then I went to SMU. I was like a cheerleader. I was like able to travel with the team. It was very, very different experience.
Yeah, that's super fun. And then you didn't want to stay there.
I didn't want to stay. Well, I did, but I didn't. I knew that I'd be able to get scholarships elsewhere. And actually, I don't even know if I got a scholarship at USC, maybe a little bit. But I was more intrigued at like, okay, well, now that I've changed majors, like, where would I get in? And then I was also intrigued, like, I knew that USC, you know, like deep in my heart, like my parents knew that USC was the better option. Like I knew USC was the better option.
I see.
And so even though I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have a lot of fun here at SMU, like at the end of the day, I would still have fun at USC and I knew it was better for my career. And then I ended up, it was all of that in a bag, like a bag of chips, like so much more.
It's funny. You started talking about how you watched your parents or anyone older than you kind of pick a career and stick with it. Because it's very telling because you've done exactly the opposite. Yeah. And you've been, even in just your internship path at USC, jumping between it, which is so awesome, all these different experiences that you had that you can speak of, you've been priming, even with colleges, starting at another college, moving here, you're kind of priming yourself over and over again to be this consistent change maker or someone who's able to make the transitions, even though someone may not want to or not. Is that always been like something that you do? You're just like, okay, I gotta mix things up now.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I never really thought about it like that. But I want to constantly like grow and evolve. And okay. For me, that's like constantly changing and putting myself in situations where I'm uncomfortable. Cause I like where there's uncomfortability, like you grow and learn and you do something new. And so I feel like I'm like learning and discovering every time I'm uncomfortable, like a new aspect of my life that I can like either go towards or like, you know, walk down that path or like decide that it's not the right thing for me.
Is that a consistent, like, do you think that's what attracts you to engineering? Cause you've brought up this idea of engineering, which it's true. Engineering at its core is a problem solving element, but you seem to, when you describe it, you seem to rise above a discipline and say like, I'm just looking for the problem I can fix. Is that kind of also why you think you move around from place to place? You're like, okay, done, yeah. Fixed, move on. Let's find the new one. Like you like to be the agent for hire.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I like consulting so much. Cause you always have a different problem to solve.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think when you solve problems, you like, I will always be a student in my life. Like not, no matter what, I'm always going to learn. And if I'm not learning, then I move on. And so if I'm not like learning and pushing myself, then I'm moving on. And honestly, being an engineer, like you're constantly doing that. Even in school, like, especially at USC, like I was studying all the time. Like I was in the engineering library 24/7, but I absolutely, even though it was like torturous, I also loved it. Because you're constantly, again, like learning, growing, adapting, learning better ways to study, learning, like, I don't know, just learning how everything like works in the world. I think it's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, totally. When you look back on your time at USC and again, that idea of, that idea of being multifaceted is that you kind of had your hand in a lot of different pots as far as your involvement goes and what you did. And I mean, I would venture to guess that there's not one thing that you say defines your college experience because you did so many things. Or am I wrong? Is there one thing? Or when you look back on college, what do you think of?
Like everything.
Everything.
Yeah, I absolutely loved my time at USC. I mean, again, not only did I have all the fun internships like outside of it, but I had all of like the fun extracurriculars. Viterbi always has like amazing events. And then I also, because I love learning, I would volunteer with a lot of the professors. So yeah. I think Professor Spedding is still there, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like volunteered at like the wind tunnel lab with him, and Professor Spedding was incredible. He did aerospace, but he also was like a zoologist, I think, major. Like,
yeah.
And
he doesn't have any engineering degrees. His degrees are in zoology.
Yeah. Oh, I thought he had one. I thought he had an aerospace engineer and a zoologist.
Maybe you might be right. You might be right. But I remember, yeah, all of his background is in zoology and like animal based stuff.
Yeah. And I didn't like, no one knows that because he like teaches it like senior level aerospace engineering classes. And yeah, so we were studying the effects of this like Amazon bird, like the feather in the wind tunnel, which was like the craziest thing. And then even, you know, my senior design project, we were deciding if we could like generate electricity on the moon using like a Crookes rhombometer. I think that's how you say it. I haven't talked about this in like literally 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like all the all the resources that you had to like study. And I really enjoyed my material science professor, and we were like looking at all these different types of materials. So, and then I got to do like the Viterbi Ambassador Program, which I absolutely loved. I love being able to like give people tours of USC and just showing them all that there was. But there was so many aspects. It wasn't just like the late night studies, but like the teams that you formed, like the memory, everything. I mean, obviously football was really fun. I think I had a pretty rough year. Like the years I was at USC, we weren't the best, unfortunately. but I mean, I also like my mom went to USC, like a large part of my family actually went to USC too. So being part of like the Trojan family, was just great. There's not like one aspect of USC where I'm like, oh, I only think about that, because I honestly sometimes wish I could go back and just do like a bunch of research at like USC sometime.
Oh, really?
Like, what would I do? I want to just like learn everything. I'm so intrigued.
Well, you know, PhD is always waiting for you there.
Yeah, don't tempt me with a good time.
So you end up with your bachelor's in mechanical engineering, and you end up doing the progressive degree program with a master's degree. And that was in industrial systems engineering. Was it engineering management?
Yeah, it was engineering management, because I knew I wanted to go into management eventually. I was like, I don't know if I want to. For some reason, I didn't think I wanted to solve problems anymore. I mean, it's a different type of problem solving. But well, now no, I'm kind of like wishing. Yeah, I'm wishing like I did more like, you know, aerospace mechanical, because that would have been cool. But yeah, I did engineering management. I also learned so much. The classes were incredible.
Well, I mean, to me, whenever I see students go the industrial systems route, or specifically when they get their undergraduate degree in a variety of engineering disciplines, and they get their master's in engineering management, because we have a lot of students to do that, it's very similar to you, where they like to essentially rise up above the technical little things of the problem and start to manage the whole systems approach of how are we going to figure out, you know, yes, there's certain people working on these elements of the problem, but we're just trying to figure out how to take it from point A to Z and get it done. And that management process and making that happen, I mean, that's, you've essentially already described, that's what you do. You know, and everything that you do. So I think it makes a lot of sense. That's exactly what you needed to do and go down that road. Maybe it's the PhD in industrial systems engineering that you might want to go after.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
We'll figure it out. But you go on from your time at USC, and you go, I think your first kind of career stint was at EY and doing that technical consulting. And you said that's where cybersecurity started coming into play. So it wasn't right away. It was...
No, it was right away, because when I did, I was really honored to have gotten a lot of different job opportunities from USC. And when I was picking, EY had specifically placed me in cybersecurity consulting, even though I had no idea what it was. They're like, we'll train you on the job.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Accenture put me in like SAP consulting, and like PwC put me in like another type of technology consulting. Mm-hmm. And I picked EY specifically because I was very intrigued with cybersecurity. I was like, I have this feeling that it's going to be big. And if I don't like it, they said I could always just go back into the normal tech consulting rotation. But if I do like it, then, you know, I'm ahead of the curve. And again, I get to problem solve and figure out new problems. And I went directly into cybersecurity consulting. All of my first projects were cybersecurity kind of like transformation based assessments. So I'd go into like Cisco or Experian or Nike, and they have us look at like every aspect of cybersecurity, whether that's like access management or data protection or governance, risk and compliance. And we do like an assessment of all of them, and then give them like we break down where they had kind of misalignments or they were missing something, and we'd give them a roadmap to fix it. And then usually they'd hire us to help fix all those issues as well. So that was like the first thing into cybersecurity, was like understanding what any of this meant. And it was a very steep learning curve because I had no idea what any of it meant. But the first few years were great. And then I got the opportunity to go to the UK with them. And at that point, like 4 years into my EY career, I was kind of sprinting. I like to do this where I'm going to work really hard and climb the corporate ladder as fast as possible.
Sure.
So I did really well at EY, and they offered me to go to the UK to help build out a specific, it's called data privacy and protection program, which is an area in cyber. Mm-hmm. So I was there for 2 years, and I came back, and then I worked at like a global law firm doing also data privacy protection kind of consulting. And then from that law firm is when I really started like the social media ironically, cybersecurity social media channels, which just ended up blowing up. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to get to that, but I want to take a quick pause and discuss what a profession in cybersecurity looks like, because I think for the layman's and from the outside perspective, that sounds like, and it seems like it should be an extension of a computer science degree. And you made reference before that like coding is just not your thing. And so how do we bring these two worlds together and help people understand what the profession or the industry, the practice, everything related to cybersecurity is?
Yeah, no, I love talking about this, Paul, because you don't need to know how to code to get into many areas of cybersecurity, although sometimes some areas do require coding.
Yeah.
But there's so many different technical and non-technical areas. So I like to say cybersecurity is kind of similar to like a science, right? When we say we major in a science, we are not just majoring in a science. You're majoring in, you know, physics or chemistry or whatever else. There are so many different domains within cybersecurity that people don't realize. And so, like I said, there's access management, which means that you're responsible for the systems that are in control of who has access to what data. And that doesn't seem like a lot, but for large companies, that is huge. There's also governance, risk, and compliance, which is, you know, if you're a type A person, this is for you. Like governance, risk, and compliance is basically like helping companies basically stay on track for any cybersecurity data protection type of audits. So there's a lot of regulations around cybersecurity, whether that's, you know, healthcare regulations like HIPAA or, you know, privacy regulations like CCPA, which is the California Consumer Privacy Act, which you guys are right in the heart of California.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So a GRC team or governance, risk, and compliance is like a huge thing. And that absolutely requires no coding. There's also data protection and privacy, which is what I really started specializing in. And that was you're helping companies understand what their like crown jewels are, like the most, they're not most expensive, but like most important thing. Mm. And then you're learning what mechanisms are in place to protect it. And you're also seeing like how you can protect it a little bit more. So for example, we always say, okay, Coca-Cola's recipe is like their crown jewels. Like if they were to ever lose that, you don't want to lose that. So how are you protecting it? Who has access? It's like the whole thing. Mm. So, and then the privacy aspect is similar to GRC, but you're making sure that your company is abiding by like privacy rules and regulations. So there's a lot of areas like that which require absolutely no coding. They do require some technical skills. I'd like to say if you know how to like use technology, like you get a new iPhone and you can kind of figure it out, you'll be able to figure out the technology that is involved in cybersecurity. It works. Now, then there's the other side of it, which is like kind of the ethical hacking, mm-hmm. Which basically means that you're hacking for good. You're like the good guys. Right. And those require coding because your job is to protect companies by showing them where they're vulnerable.
Right.
So a lot of times there's these things called bug bounties. Companies will put out like, hey, if you're able to get into this system, we'll give you this amount of money. And so a lot of hackers, like ethical hackers are, you know, getting paid because they're like, finding the vulnerabilities in these company systems, and then they're getting paid to like show them how they got in.
Yeah.
And so there's really like really cool spots if you do want to know how to code. And actually, when I worked at UI, we constantly went back to USC to specific classes, and I'm blanking on the classes that we used to go back to. And we'd work with the teachers to tell them like, hey, these are the skills that we need the students to have in order for them to get into the attack and pen team, which attack and penetration is basically similar to ethical hacking, but they're used to try to get into systems and see where they're vulnerable. So, we'd actually actively, and I think EY is, at least when I was still working at EY, USC was the biggest, school that we hired from. I think we hired like hundreds of people from EY or from USC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all types of cyber careers that no one really understands or recognizes. And for me too, like similar to engineering, where I thought it was like an all like a dirty old car mechanic, I thought a cybersecurity person was like a guy behind a computer in a black hoodie.
Yeah.
And so, there's so much more. And again, you don't need a certain type of degree. I mean, engineering is great. And then especially if you want to go into the more technical coding, you know, obviously like software is great, but you can, as long as you are actively excited about like problem solving, I think you're, and you have a degree. I'm biased. I love people that have a degree in engineering, but you know.
Right. Well, at its core, it's similar to what we were talking about with industrial systems engineering and engineering management, is that it's complex systems, right? And it's understanding the intricacy of those systems, the interplay, especially at large companies. It's never one system. Usually those vulnerabilities exist because of the overlap of differing systems. And it's like, oh, we forgot we have that over there that provides this access. And oh yeah, no, that's old. We don't use that anymore. You know, all these different things that are, I mean, just, I always worry about it at USC, where like we hear all these stories about hacking and email servers being hacked. I mean, just in the last, gosh, less than 10 years. I mean, in your like professional career, you have these huge monumental, you know, hacks of entertainment companies, right? You've got that have made the news, and then large retail operations and hacks that go on there. And I'm always thinking like, man, if they can get a hold of emails, that's just not good. Like any company can be vulnerable for what someone says on an email, even if it's back and forth. It's some pretty crazy stuff, not to mention like just stuff that was in the old days. We would send back and forth files. Right. Like just to make sure that we were, you know, hey, check this one out, look at this. And now it's like, we never want to email files back and forth because the possibility of an email being let loose could have all sorts of identity disclosures that you don't want to happen. And we have to protect that identity very carefully. And so now it's very careful, like stop sending spreadsheets, quit emailing spreadsheets. There's professional, there's protected information there. So we got to make sure we're doing that. And it's always getting people that are used to doing the old stuff to try to come back on the new stuff. Like use the lockdown share drive. It's also makes it a lot easier on your computer than sharing giant spreadsheets back and forth to one another.
I mean, cybersecurity is actually insane. And that's, I think I also love it. And I've been in it for so long is because like I said, there's so many aspects of cyber and it's constantly changing. Like I am always having imposter syndrome because there's no possible way for any human to ever like grasp every concept of cyber. It's just impossible. No. And if you actually talk to anyone in cyber, even like the people that have been in cyber for like 30, 40 plus years, they all have it too, because every day it changes. Every day the risk environment, the landscape changes. And so if you're like me and you're just like, you get bored of stuff easily, I would definitely consider cybersecurity too. Because once you're in like one area of it, it's really easy to like move into different areas because you kind of understand like the basics.
So you bring up imposter syndrome, and I think that's an important thing to discuss because it's come up before here with a number of our, not only our students, it comes up with our faculty, it comes up with professionals and alums like yourself. And I think it's important to talk about it as frequently as possible because it is in everybody and it just manifests in different way, I guess is my opinion of it. And my opinion is that whenever someone is able to talk about it, or identified in themselves, it usually means that they're one of the best people out there. Like it's the ones that don't have the imposter syndrome that I'm actually worried about. Do you ever run into people that don't have any sense of like imposter syndrome? You're like, oh, you're a little too confident in what you do.
I kind of usually actively avoid people like that. I'm like, they're not good for me. I don't want to
exactly.
be here.
No, they're not helpful.
They're not helpful. But yeah, no, I'm every day I'm like, I don't know how I got here. I just know that I'm just like one step in the right direction, get 1% better every day, keep learning. And
but that's your superpower. That's my point, is that that's your superpower. Yeah. Don't you think so?
Yeah, sure.
You don't believe it.
I I'm really weird about superpowers and stuff because I just feel like I don't want to get a big head. I just want to be as close, like down to earth on the ground as possible.
I get it.
Which I mean, to my own detriment, because people are like, Caitlin, like you can't keep saying that you're like not intelligent because it makes people seem like feel bad about themselves. But I'm like, I just think I'm like an average human that just likes learning.
Right. There is another side of that, which is like, you can't claim to be an expert in something and also say you have no idea what you're doing. Like it's two different, you can't use both of those at the same time.
Well, to me, an expert is like, if you've been in a field for like more than 6 years, like you should be considered an expert.
Should, but that there's a lot of people that are in a field for very long and are not an expert, which is a whole other ball of wax. But I guess my point is, I think imposter syndrome is something that the more that you talk about it, the better it becomes. And I also believe that, because I'm a huge believer in the fact that someone's largest skill set often manifests or can manifest as their greatest weakness. And it's just this idea of, whatever side of the bed you wake up on that day, or however you're leaning in that direction. And, you know, and so it could be like what we've talked about so far, is that you've kind of been this self-effacing version of yourself where you're like, yeah, I get bored of things, so I hop around a lot. I'm like, no, actually, I think that you're just constantly moving because you do like new problems to solve. And that's how you know you're comfortable. It's like, you love that discomfort, but you're own it. That's your power. You're, because a lot of people, me included, I don't want to do new things. I keep going down the same road.
Yeah, I have a crazy one. It's a good thing.
It's not crazy.
I wouldn't change any part of it.
That's my point. Is that's not crazy. And the idea of imposter syndrome specifically to high school. Do you think that that's something that you had coming out of high school, going into college, or is this something that's recent?
Yeah, I do think like the college. Yeah, I do think like the college application process really breaks people. Like, it was really hard. Mm-hmm. It just, cause like you're getting like rejected a lot. I mean,
yeah.
I got rejected a decent amount of times. I don't know how many like other people got rejected, but like it's like a sad, scary rejection. I do think, yeah, like I definitely, when I went to USC, because I was a transfer, I really felt imposter syndrome. Like I was like, I don't think.
You're always on the outside. Everyone knows something you don't know.
Yeah.
You're like, what do I not know? Who do I not know in this class when I walked in?
Exactly. Or like people looked, I don't know. I feel like people sometimes look down on transfers because they're like, oh, you couldn't get in the first time, so you had to do it again. Maybe that's just like in my head.
It's totally in your head. But yeah, I know it doesn't take it away. It doesn't invalidate it for you at all, but it is.
Yeah. But that's what was in my head. And I was like, I felt like I had to constantly prove myself that I was like, worthy and capable of actually like succeeding at USC. Because again, like SMU and USC, amazing, but a little bit different of a caliber of a school. And so, you said it.
I didn't say it.
I absolutely love SMU. I do. It's a great school, but it is different calibers. I'd be lying if I said otherwise. I just felt like I was always.
It wasn't the right place for you.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
I mean, again, I don't regret any of my decisions in my entire life, even the bad ones. Yeah. So,
and Dallas is a cool city. There's some cool stuff going
on. Dallas is amazing. And I still have amazing friends from Dallas. I go back and visit Dallas like once every few months, weirdly enough.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I also go visit LA a lot too because my parents are there. But parents are there. I have a lot of friends in LA too. But it's great.
As a transfer student, that feeling of just always being on the outside is something that we talk about a lot, because there's, as much as we do, we know we're never going to take that out of your head. And so the one thing I tell transfer students, or at least I hear a lot of too, is that after the first couple of weeks, it does kind of go away. I mean, like each new situation is always like, okay, now I'm the only one out again, which is, I think, something that just is constantly repeating itself. But when you're in the class, it's not like you're walking around with a giant red T on your sweater. Like, is that like, oh, there's the transfer student. Like you walk in wondering
Scarlet
that
letter.
Yeah. Like you're the only one. And then all of a sudden people are like, oh, hey, what's up? You know, like, no, not everybody knows everybody. It's a really weird place where you always know somebody and you always don't know somebody. I think that's how I describe USC, where it's just big enough.
Latrobe's pretty small.
Yeah. You're right. When you're in your classes. But I guess my point is that you get to that point of, you think you know everybody, and there's always someone new, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I guess that's my point of, I mean, maybe by senior year and you're going into your graduate year, you do know a lot more, but it does have that sense of new and familiar at the same time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the first year was definitely a little bit rough because I was in my head about it. And I did feel like I was constantly trying to like prove myself, but I think that was just, again, for myself, just like, I think it was literally proving to myself that I was capable of being there, not to anyone else.
Right.
But yeah, I think I would be lying if I said transferring was like the easiest thing in the world,
Right.
But it was also the best thing I did. So.
But then you take this idea of always being the new kid and you just kind of start identifying yourself by it. Cause from a career perspective, it sure looks like then you just keep hopping. You see moving from place to place to place. And you're like, you know what? I need to be the new kid everywhere I go. I mean, how do you describe the next 4 years of your career after leaving EY?
Transformational is probably the best way to describe it. And very odd. I mean, I think EY was like an incredible, well, first of all, USC led me to be successful at every single school I was in. Again, it wasn't just like the schooling, but all the extracurriculars. So I did, I was in ASME, which is like a global mechanical engineering organization. And I actually just did a documentary with them. They like
featured
Yeah.
Associated students or the American Society of Mechanical Engineers? Is it American Society?
American Society of Mechanical Engineers. Yeah. And then I also was in Society of Women Engineers, which was huge. That like saved me from like those are my closest friends at USC. I absolutely loved SWE. And so there's so many extracurriculars that I learned, like the soft skills, honestly, that is needed for, in my opinion, absolutely needed for corporate life, which I don't think a lot of people realize, and they definitely underestimate. So USC set me up for like being successful at EY, and then EY set me up to be successful everywhere else. But like, yeah, after the 4 years after EY,
boot camp for you. It's like corporate boot camp, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I worked at an incredible company called DLA Piper, which is a top law firm, one of the top law firms in the entire world. And then, which again, worked with amazing, I'm absolutely honored with the people that I got to work with. They've completely like shaped my life. And then I worked at Protivity for like, which is a smaller consulting company, I think for like a year. And then I got the opportunity to work at TikTok, leading their global cybersecurity department, advocacy and culture, which basically meant I was in charge of training globally their employees on cybersecurity best practices, as well as their users on cybersecurity best practices. So I was making fun TikTok videos, and they actually found me ironically from my TikTok, or unironically. So it was, I mean,
That's ironically unironic. It's like ironically unironic, which is kind of funny. Like
I don't even know what to say about it, but I started the TikTok during COVID when I was still working actually at the law firm, and I didn't have my name on it. I was super, super embarrassed by it. I still am a little embarrassed by it, to be completely honest. It wasn't until the last year.
We need to dig up that feeling in a minute, but go ahead.
Oh, God. It's more like the imposter syndrome thing that's part of it, the embarrassing part. But I wanted to be like a force for good. I was seeing a lot of people's like mental health go down with COVID and just like watching and scrolling and comparing lives. And I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to start a TikTok, I didn't even touch Instagram at this point. I was like, if I'm going to start a TikTok, I want it to be like educational. And I was kind of racking my brain on like, okay, what should I do? What makes me different? And originally it was going to be actually a woman in engineering, because I really wanted to be like a beacon of light for other women that had no kind of mentor or anyone to look up to. But there were already a few people that were pretty good in that space. And I was like, you know, I don't see anyone in cyber, because to be honest, social media and cybersecurity don't really, you know, it's like oil and water. They don't mix well. But if anything, that's the reason why I did it. I was like, this is a way to reach the public. No one's doing anything right now. How are we going to educate people on how getting into cyber or being safe online if no one's even like where majority of the public is? So I really started that channel there was three reasons. One was to educate people about what cybersecurity was, because like we talked about earlier, I mean, there's a huge stigma against it, not against it, but about it, what it actually is. And then the second pillar was inspiring more women and or diversity to get into STEM careers as a whole. And then the third was just overall educate people on like how to be safe online. And then it just blew up, and it just continues to blow up. And I'm really honored, and I don't know what I did to deserve it, but I'm just here to help one person with every video. That's the goal. As long as I help one person for each video, I'm happy.
So to bring everybody in on this is your full-time gig now, right? So you no longer work at TikTok.
I no longer work at TikTok.
But I do want to unpack what TikTok's all about too in a minute. But you now are running this company called Cybersecurity Girl. And this is essentially your tag. People can look you up and find you on Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube. You have your own website, cybersecuritygirl.net. And it is a super cool platform. And I am fascinated by the idea of the world of influencer, what you just said, like it's a social media influencer, but tech knowledge aficionado. and influencing young girls to get excited about this. This is a really, really cool space, and congratulations on all of your success, because I think it's exactly perfect for you. This is like really, really cool stuff. I'm fascinated by the fact that you think that you're embarrassed by it and it's your full-time gig. Like this is a really weird feeling to have.
We already know I have a lot of issues I got to sort through, Paul.
Well, I guess my point is, it's really cool just to help you out. I mean, I think you like doing things where you're uncomfortable. Right. And, yeah. And you only need to like, well, I got to be cautious. I got to problem solve. I got to find where I'm going to go here. Cause whenever you're comfortable, it's not exciting to you.
No, it's not. It's not.
That's exciting. Okay. That's okay. That's good stuff. That means you're doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
So what do you want people to know about this tech space or about cybersecurity? Cause it seems like you're now, cause you weren't focused on like the corporate ideas of your previous jobs. And now you're much more focused on the consumer ideas or just the individual personal safety issues. Right.
Yeah. So on the journeys, I mean, I left my corporate job at TikTok like 8 or 9 months ago, and I honestly didn't really have a plan. I was like, I'm just going to continue to build this brand. I know that this brand is like going to be going somewhere far. And at this point now, I feel like I'm more, like you said, I'm more on like the consumer journey of like, I want to give, like everyone asks me who my target audience is. And I'm like, it's literally everyone. Like everyone needs to understand what cybersecurity is. And then on top of that, you also need to understand that like we have a massive gap in the job market with cybersecurity. No one's like trained in cybersecurity at this point. And so we're trying to get more people in. We need more people in. We need literally all types of people. So I'm like, I need this to reach everyone. And I'm coming again from a consumer aspect, not a corporate aspect. And the main difference is a lot of people think cybersecurity started for companies. And I actually think cybersecurity started for consumers. Because if you look at what cybersecurity is, it started basically from the CIA triad, which is confidentiality is a C, which means that only certain people have access, the right people have access to the data. Integrity is an I, which is, you know, making sure that the data is accurate. And then availability is making sure that the data is available to the right people at the right time. And all of that really applies like yourself. Like imagine your own personal information. Like, wouldn't you want that to apply to yourself? Wouldn't you want to know how to do that yourself? But the reason why it started from a company perspective is because all these companies, more from like a cyber warfare, like obviously like there's like, you know, corporate espionage and like cyber warfare from like Russia, China, all that stuff. Companies are trying to protect and lock down. But no one really started educating the public on how they can be safe. I always say it's like taxes. Like the government is probably great at like not teaching us about taxes for their own benefit, but it's actually not a benefit for the government now to not teach us about cybersecurity.
Right.
Because once you start realizing and that you have the power to protect yourself, you'll also use that power to protect your family, your loved ones, and your company. So it doesn't go from corporate to personal. It should be going from personal to corporate. And I've been working really hard on like just getting everyone to bringing cybersecurity topics down to it, like a digestible, relatable, and understandable aspect that's like simple. And the way I do this is I don't understand most cybersecurity topics. Like I literally have to do my own research. Like I really don't.
Yeah.
And so this is where I think it's really fun for me to do these videos because I'm constantly learning. Like I have news alerts. I'm in a bunch of forums. And when I see stuff happening, I'm like, let me do research and let me like write something about how I interpret it. And then the second filter is, okay, would my mom understand this or my dad understand this? And that's how, like literally that's every single time. So I get to constantly learn. I get to constantly like kind of hopefully, you know, be on point with what's going on in the cyber world. And then I get to, you know, really not dilute it, but break it down to people for them to understand like how it impacts them on a daily basis. Cause if it doesn't impact them, like why do they need to, I just feel like that we live in a world of clickbait and half the stuff it's not necessary. So I'm just trying to.
That was going to be the next thing is I've watched your videos. And I think that one of the coolest ones I saw was, let me tell you why that news article you just read doesn't matter. It's like the news made a big deal out of, I forget what it was. It was a couple of weeks ago. Or maybe yeah.
Some like or so iPhone ago. Feature or something.
It was the iPhone feature. It was exactly that. And specific parts of this country were going nuts about like, oh my God, this is now this company's evil and taking over the world. And you're like, no.
Yeah. Like you can turn it off if you want to, but like, it's not like, you know, make or break your life.
Yeah.
But yeah. Exactly. It was like exploding. I get that all the time. And I'm like, I have to do my own research, but I'm trying to dilute it and like really give real news that's like helpful.
It's great.
And impactful.
I think it's great. I love it. I think it's fantastic. I am so curious, and this is purely just me, and I am totally just projecting onto you, but like I love social media stuff and what you just said, it's not diluting it, but it is breaking it down. It's simplifying messages. And we try to do some of these things. And like the minute, and this is why we don't do this, is like the minute I get a phone and I like start like holding it and looking at it, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. Like I can't do any of this stuff. I get very self-aware and I'm just completely done. And so given that you do so many of these, I'm so curious, like behind the scenes, is it like 12 takes where you're like, oh, that wasn't good? Like, oh my God, I completely just got embarrassed for myself.
Yeah. So the way I do it, it's very easy. I jump cut. Like I do the research and then I just go randomly. Like I'll just have my phone set up and I'm just talking to it. And then I'll just cut off pieces. And if I don't like the way I said it, I'll just like restart it immediately. So I don't do like,
you're always editing in your mind. You're like, okay, that wasn't going to get, I'm just going to keep talking. Yeah, so you're not like on and off.
I don't go on and off. I literally just do like a long, like 4 minute video and then I cut it down to like,
I'm so curious behind how the sausage is made, but like, so how long does it take? Like, let's say today you're going to go, you're going to film this new thing. Is that up within an hour? Like, are you editing that quickly?
Yeah. I mean, I just did one before this podcast and it was, I don't know if you watch the Call Her Daddy podcast. It's very aggressive, but I try to sometimes take clips of like very popular.
By the way, I love how you couldn't, you're like, you couldn't look at me. You said, I don't know if you're the Call Her Daddy, but
I actually don't watch that podcast or listen to it, but it like somehow came up on my For You page, which I don't know what that means or saying about me, but it was about like how she guessed her boyfriend's password and how easy it was. And so I literally took like a clip of that. And I was like, if it's this easy for you, it's this easy for hackers.
Got it.
And like, this is what you should do to like create strong passwords. So usually I'll record within, it'll be like a 10 minutes of me recording. And then sometimes it's like 20, 30 minutes of me doing research, but 10 minutes of recording. And then it takes a little bit more time to edit because like I said, I do a long recording and then I kind of like cut the pieces that I want and put it all together. So yeah, it's usually within like an hour, hour and a half.
What's the biggest thing? One or two things that you want everybody to know about their own personal cybersecurity that they should be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a few, but the first is like anytime you're online, like nothing's free, especially in the US, like they're tracking you, they're selling all your information. And like every time you create an account, it's just going towards your digital footprint. Your digital footprint's getting larger and larger. I mean, they're even tracking like what you hover on or like the sites that you're on for more than, you know, a certain amount of seconds. Most of it's for marketing.
When you say they, you mean those are like corporations.
Corporate websites or whatever else it is. I mean, even companies are tracking like what their employers are doing, like to a pretty scary level, some of them.
Like, the computer I'm on right now has got something tracking me right now.
It is. It's tracking your chats. It's tracking a lot. So I just be mindful. I would try to literally limit, if you could check out as a guest, if you're like, you know, online shopping or doing whatever, try not to like create a million accounts. I think for me, I grew up in a world where like, I mean,
but I want my, I want my 10% off. I want my 10% off my first shipping. Like that's what I want.
I know, you know, you can generate a temporary email address and there's actually a few companies now where you can like generate, it won't be temporary. It just goes into an app. So like you can control, so it's not like your actual personal data. But just like try not to, or find like a different discount code rather than like start an account. And then like the one thing I just, if you take nothing away from like tips for this, it's like passwords. Passwords are annoyingly, it's like I want to hit my head against the wall every time I say this, because this is like the one boring thing I say all day. Like, passwords makes it, it's really easy for people to break into accounts because you have very guessable, easy passwords. So just make
sure. Or the same password across so many different entities. Like, it was the easy way to do things. Like, oh, I got the super complicated password and I use it everywhere. I'm like, yeah, but once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah. And what people don't realize, so I always used to say, like, okay, imagine a password is like a key to your house. And if you like close your eyes and you're giving the key to that one website or that one person, and then all of a sudden you use the same password. So you're giving your keys out now to like, you know, 10 more people and 10 more people. And then someone decides to drop the key randomly. They don't know where it is. They dropped it. But multiple people are dropping it now. And now everyone has keys to your house.
Yeah.
Like, and how safe do you feel?
And the key includes the address to your house. Like, that's the other thing.
Yeah. It includes everything. Because what happens is, like, when there's you know, hacks onto like corporate, I mean, there's tons. If you go to haveibeenpwned.com, like if you type in the email or the phone number, or whatever, it will say when it's come up on the dark web and for what account it was hacked. And every time there's an account hacked with that, like, let's say for that example, that email and your password's connected to it, all these hackers have to do is just run the same email and password across a bajillion different accounts and they'll eventually get in if you have the same one. So if you can, and I strongly recommend this, have different passwords for like the big things, like financial, like any bank stuff, completely different passwords. Some people really care about social media, so definitely have different ones for social media, healthcare, schooling. Whatever ones are most important to you is what I would have different passwords for if you like actually can't, like, don't want to do a lot of them. But
yeah. How do you feel about some of these off the shelf password management systems? You know, 1Password, Dashlane, even Apple has their own stuff.
I don't give mine to Apple just because I'm trying to spread it out. You know, like if Apple gets hacked, they already have enough of my stuff. I don't need them to have all my passwords too. LastPass has been hacked like 5 times. Okay, it's been hacked 2 or 3 times. I would not use
more than once. A trivial amount.
it's just, I wouldn't use it. But like, there's new and innovative ways that these password managers are storing and saving your passwords. So Keeper Security is a really good one. They've won like a lot of awards in the last year around how they're storing and securing your passwords. I use them and 1Password. I shouldn't have 2, but I do. But yeah, I password managers are the best as long as you have a secure password for your password manager.
Got it.
Because like to get into all your passwords, a lot of people end up using the same password that they've used in the past. And I'm like, that doesn't work. So
do you have, this is a personal thing, and if it actually tells you too much, then let's just not talk about it. But I have my own like mental pattern on how I create passwords. Mm. Is that how you think most people do it? Like, I have a thing in my head that only I know, and every site has a different password, but it's because I have kind of a formula in my head as to how I'm doing it.
I don't.
You don't? You what are you doing to make up a password? Is it, are you using
the password manager is like
they create the new one? So you do the generated ones. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I use the passphrase stuff, you know.
The passphrase is good, like 5 to 7 words. The issue with passphrases though is, again, a lot of people have like the same base password, like it's this first, like the same first 5. Mm. And then they'll add like a 1, 2, 3 or like a 1 or an exclamation. And then once like, you know, the first, like the, like, let's just say a lot of people like use their home address or like a street address. So like, let's say I lived on like Rose Court and my favorite number was like, or in high school was like 77. So if my base was always Rose Court 77, and then I added like a 1 or a 1, 2, 3, if Rose Court 77 was breached recently, there's also an algorithm for hackers to use that generates different ways of versions of that 1Password. So I would just be weary of like not reusing the same like kind of baseline.
Got it. Okay, cool. That's helpful. Yeah. No, that's great.
Yeah.
So far I'm good. I'm not. Okay, I have a mental formula for passphrases.
You have a very smart mind because I the formula that works in my head is not that smart. And I need a password manager to help me remember all this stuff.
I feel pretty confident that I could like tell people my formula. They still wouldn't figure it out because it's all internal to me. Like it's like a very specific, like this character does something and then there's a keyword. And like the keyword is associated with whatever I'm like doing on that site, if that makes any sense, or whatever like my purpose of that site is. And then I have a number combo that I will mess around with that I'm usually making up on its own. And usually that makes sense to me because then I know.
I mean, that makes sense when you're saying it.
I saw this thing once where it's like, and who knows if it's true, but I saw this thing once where it's like a computer generating a password can likely be figured out by another computer. But if you made up this like phrase that only you made up, like dinosaur purple dishwasher, like no one's going to come up with that. That makes any sense.
Exactly. The other thing is like, I was just watching a video about Palo Alto Networks, and the way that they're able to generate random numbers is not actually through a computer, because computers actually end up being kind of consistent.
Yeah,
so they like have systematic these things like, they have these like lava lamps, like hundreds of lava lamps on this one wall. And a computer scans a lava lamp, and then from whatever like scan they get, it generates a random number. So it's constantly changing, and lava lamps are unpredictable unlike computers. Isn't that cool?
That is really cool.
Yeah. I was like, geniuses.
How are they getting a number out of that? It's like number of bubbles?
I think it's from like some scan of what the lava lamp looked like, and like a certain figure is certain numbers.
Did you have a lava lamp in your room in college?
Not in college. No, I was, Did you?
Yeah, I did.
I had it in my room, like in junior high, I think in high school.
I was always shocked at how hot they were, and it kind of freaked me out. Yeah. I thought I was going to start a fire.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think I should have this anymore.
My sister actually gave me two lava lamps like randomly a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, why do you have these? And she's like, I thought it'd be cool because she owns like a cheese shop. She's like, I thought they'd be cool in the shop, but they don't fit. I'm like, okay.
Is your sister in LA?
No, she's in Miami. She's one of the reasons why I moved here.
Oh, really? So tell me about
Miami. She also
went
to USC. She got her MBA at USC.
Oh, that's awesome. So she was in Miami. And so that's what kind of drew you down. Cause now as an influencer, you're kind of running your own spot. You can be wherever you want to be. I was kind of curious to get into this. Why Miami? But your sister was a big part of that.
Yeah. Well, my family is like my entire life. And so my sister and her husband moved down here. He's in crypto. And then my brother was like, you know what? I'm going to quit my job and move to Miami and find another job in Miami. And I was like, if the whole family's going, like I'm going to Miami. So I lived with my brother the first year. My brother lived with me. And then he also went to USC, by the way. So fun facts, all Trojans.
Wow.
So my family was here. And then I ended up loving it more than my brother ended up moving back to LA. But I loved it here. I'm a big weather girl. I didn't realize it was like that big of a deal. But I need the sun. And this place has like constant sunlight. It's great. I'm always warm and it makes me happy.
What do people not know about Miami?
I think Miami has a bad rep because most people come here for like spring break, and it's like similar to like Las Vegas, where like obviously you can go into that. But I think during COVID, a lot of people started moving here that just like, and there's also a lot of like a lot more snowbirds. And it honestly feels like it's freshman year of college where everyone's just trying to like meet each other. There's a lot of like entrepreneurs here now. So I actually really, really enjoy, I hate saying vibe, but I'm going to say vibe. The vibe of the city in the last like couple of years.
I think vibe's a great word.
It's just a lot of entrepreneurs.
Vibe's a great word. I use vibe a lot now because vibe is I think vibe is a perfect combination of ethereal and tactical things at the same time. It's kind of that mix between feelings and real stuff, if that makes sense. It's not just feeling. It's something more tangible, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. Miami, so it's a really good vibe.
Miami to me is I don't know Miami very well. I'm always, whenever I'm in town, I'm down for like a day and a half and then I'm out of there. And I feel like Miami is probably similar to LA in that it's just too big to consume in a day. It's got a lot of different personalities. And I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, you got a way different vibe in different spots and they're all 5 minutes apart.
Yep. Yeah. You know, I actually almost went to University of Miami. It was between that and SMU. And I came to visit Miami back in, you know, a long time ago. And I immediately was like, I can't live here. And so, and my cousin actually, who also went to USC, lives across the street from me. She moved here after she went to USC, and she kept trying to convince me to move here. And I'd come visit her a lot. And I was like, no way would I ever move here. It just, it's very different in the last few years. Like, again, I think COVID kind of changed a lot of things, because this place was very open. And so I think it kind of got a lot of people that were like really, really hardworking, cooped up, that wanted to like be able to have a life, to move here. And then everyone realized how amazing it was. And at that point it was cheap. Now it's like one of the most expensive cities. But yeah, I mean, everyone wants, like when you meet people, they're all like entrepreneurs. They all just like, you know, started their business. They want you to succeed. They want to help. Like there's just, it's a really, really cool place to be right now.
That's awesome. Now, is it like high rise living? Is that where you're at right now? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to be in the city. So I have a few places, but I wanted to be like in the heart of the city. So I'm like right on the water.
So next time I'm in Miami, where should I not miss? Where should I go?
Well, it depends like what you want.
I mean, I'm in town for an evening. I mean, like, you know, what's the cool place to hit up? Like what are your go-tos?
Oh man. Well, I love Mid Beach. I'm a member of Soho House, and that's like
Mid Beach is you're saying mid of South Beach.
Yeah. So there's like South Beach, and then there's like Mid Beach, and then there's, you know, further up, but Mid Beach is like not where the shenanigans are. But like,
also that's where Soho House is.
It's where Soho House is too. It's like on the beach. So I go there a lot, but I mean, there's a lot of really cool, like restaurants. Like, it depends again, if you want like a party vibe or like there's restaurants that have like entertainment. There's restaurants that have, yeah, so it just depends. But like there's Queen, there's like Marion, Sea Spice. They're all kind of crazy, but they're all very Miami. I would go also to, I'm in Edgewater, but there's like Midtown and a Design District. If you like shopping, there's a lot of really good places. I can't like choose one.
Okay. Yeah. I was in Miami like a long time ago. And it's always been, I told myself it was really great to visit in my 20s. And now I'm like, I don't think I, really want to go back.
That's because like you probably did South Beach and all.
I did South Beach. It was, I tell the story all the time where it's like, it was the one night in my life where like the group of people I was with, like we flew in, we had dinner, we went back to the hotel, we watched all of Saturday Night Live, and ooh, then we went out. And I was like,
oh yeah, that's Miami.
Right. And that's Miami. And I can't explain that because I went to bed at 10 last night, like, and I was exhausted. I couldn't.
Yeah.
Not do
my normal bedtime's like 9:30, 10, but here you don't go out and start eating dinner until like 9:30, 10. And then people go out at midnight.
Yeah.
There's clubs that literally, there's a club that opens from 1 AM. It starts at 1 AM and goes till noon the next day. So people will go before work and they'll just like go and dance from like six, headliners come on
before
at 6 AM.
Work.
Yeah. They'll go, the headliners come on at 6 AM and they go from like 6 AM till like 8:30 and then they'll go home.
Yeah.
Work-life
no.
balance? I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. That's what you want to call it. That's what you want to call it. We have,
I mean,
event.
If you're going to go out at night, what's the difference of going out in the morning? You can still go to bed early. You go to bed at like 8 AM or 8 PM sure. and then you wake up at six.
Sure. I guess. I don't know. So we have events in Fort Lauderdale, and that is not Miami, right?
Like
No, that's completely different.
But it is beautiful and warm.
Okay, because it's the same basic stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 30 minutes away.
Okay. Yeah, no, so my wife and I have been talking a lot about, like, we got to get out there, mostly because we haven't done the Keys before. We've never always want to get down and see the Keys. I don't know, have you ever
been actually
there?
Haven't done the Keys. I mean, I did Key Biscayne, which is like this one.
Yeah,
but
right
it's
there.
Not like, yeah, it's not all the Key Largo and all that, but
right.
You have to tell me how it is. I've been meaning to do it. I just don't really want to drive that far, even though it's like right here.
Well, yeah, one of the reasons we started looking at also Key Biscayne is that for some reason, the Ritz at Key Biscayne is like the cheapest Ritz in the world. Like it's
really?
Like super easy, super cheap to get into compared
what?
To other. Yeah, when I looked at it, I was just looking at certain dates, but I was looking, I'm like, this is not bad. This is doable compared to the usual Ritz prices.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's kind of its own place, its own island. So kind of down for that. So I'll let you know.
Yeah, and you're close to Miami still, so you can like go in.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Same idea. So when you look back on USC times, if you were to come back and spend a weekend, what are the places you want to hit up?
Well, I'm a food person, so
yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
This is going to be the sad part, though. It's not anything fancy. I would go to Spudnuts, which is a donut shop like
Spudnuts
near the row. At like
this is
3
the first time. This is a new. This is the first time Spudnuts is getting a shout out on the podcast.
It's so good, and all their fresh donuts come out at like 2 or 3. And when I was studying in the library until that late, I would like want it.
Okay. Is there a specific? Because the thing about Spudnuts is that it's potatoes made. I'm sorry, it's donuts made out of potato dough. Is that right? Potato flour. That's why it's really? Called. You don't even know this. That's why it's called Spudnuts.
I just thought it was the name.
No, they use potato flour.
Oh, well, yeah, sure.
Well, now I need to look it up to make sure that this is actually right. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the whole point of Spudnuts.
Yeah. What was the library, engineering library's name again? The library name? I'm forgetting.
Just engineering, Seaver Science Library, but engineering library.
I thought it was a different name, but yeah, maybe. I actually put myself in a relationship with that library on Facebook when I was a student at USC. Because the amount of nights I spent there was laughable. No, I mean, I would do something with the Society of Women Engineers. I would like go with where there was like an event. Like they always have the best events. They also had really good recruiting events. I would definitely like go study or like, go. I still absolutely love studying in libraries. Like people like going to coffee shops. I'm like, I want to go find a cool library. So are there any new libraries on campus?
Well, I don't want to break the news to you. First off, before I do that, I'm going to send you a little, just a picture here of Spudnuts to kind of relive the, to relive your memories real quickly. But
so good.
I hate to break the news to you, but the engineering library has been drastically changed.
How?
We completely gutted it and made it the giant makerspace.
Okay. Worth it or not worth it? Because I feel like that's no.
You have no idea how cool it is. Like it is amazing. Now granted, that's the first floor. The second floor has been redone so that you can go up there and have study space and things like that. But it is now a really cool, huge, like the whole first floor. And then we expand it out and it's got like all the makerspace, so like the car, we have 2 car teams in there. We have a full machine shop in there. We've got concrete canoe, like all the design teams, and then a full like wood shop, and everything is in there. It's really a full 3D printing advanced fabrication lab is inside there. It's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I also go like hang out with I would probably go to the wind tunnel lab again. If I could give a tour to people, I would definitely go give a tour because, you know, why not?
Yeah. The Spedding calls that the fabulous fluids facility now.
Oh.
Because there's multiple wind tunnels and then the water channel and a couple other things. So it's all about fluids.
Interesting. For those of you guys that don't know, the wind tunnel is like the second largest wind tunnel in the United States. It used to be the first largest, and then it was moved from DC to USC. So, and then now the biggest one's in DC, but it's a pretty cool thing. And then also I was part of like Rocket Lab. I would definitely be part of that again.
Yeah.
They were the first, university to launch a rocket into space. It only took
still
a year only, after I left.
Still the only one.
They're still the only one?
Yeah, still the only one.
Do they still like do launches or not really?
Yeah, they just broke another record. God, I'm going to get it wrong. They're going to get ready to launch again very soon. And they have feelings that they're going to hit space again. And to be
like the Kármán line?
Yeah, the Kármán line to be the second to do their own record one more time. But they just broke another record on a static fire test. So like when they get the engine all propped up to see what happens. And I guess they broke some sort of record. I'm going to get this wrong. Whatever is like the most powerful engine ever student built or something like that. But basically it was like, it broke all these records of like power, and it's like, they're going nuts over it. So pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah. See, that was fun. And then the other one that I did a lot was, like the mock model planes. I'm going to forget the name of that club.
Air Design Team.
There we go.
There you go.
Air Design Team. All these, like, you get to like build. It was the coolest thing ever. Like there was, and then I'd obviously eat Spudnuts. So, you know, that's.
So get a box of Spudnuts and walk around all these places and check them out. I have one last question for you, just because it's so curious and it's in the news lately, and you have such a relationship, a past relationship with TikTok. All this news going on about TikTok right now, and the Congress trying to, you know, sell the company, and everybody's got feelings. What are your thoughts on this? What's happening, especially in the world of cybersecurity?
Oh boy.
I know it's a large kind of thought process, and if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine too.
I'll give kind of like a high level thing. At the end of the day, cyber warfare is like a very large thing. And what people don't realize, cyber warfare is all around us. And the craziest thing is we never see it.
Yeah.
So it's constant attacks from different nation states, and the US is just trying to protect themselves. So I understand where they're coming from. Now, I do think there's a ton of misinformation and incorrect information about TikTok. Mm-hmm. Obviously I worked there, and even though I didn't read every single line of code, I can't like obviously vouch for that. The teams in the US are the smartest people I knew. They're like ex-FBI, CIA agents. And I don't know where this misinformation is coming from the inside. I don't know if it's because the US only wants, you know, Meta to win because, you know, it's a US-based company, or they're just trying to cover all bases. I do know that there are a lot of issues with social media. Yeah. I do think that there needs to be, and they need to be addressed. And I also think this can be addressed if there's like a federal privacy law that like forces social media platforms like YouTube and Meta and TikTok to be a lot more transparent with, you know, what's going on. I actually think TikTok is more transparent than Meta, but no one really bats an eye because Meta's based in the US. So I just don't, I think there's a lot of misinformation. Obviously, like I said, I wasn't able to read like the lines of code that's backing it up, but I was able to work with like the people, and they're all extremely intelligent. Every single person at that company really wants to be as transparent as possible, and has been. And so it's just hard for me to see this like weird power struggle between the US and TikTok, because ultimately, in my opinion, like TikTok is a force for good. Yes, social media is not the best, but again, if we could regulate that, like there's a lot of issues with, you know, kids on social media and all of that. I think there's a better way to mitigate than to ban an app that's, I think, you know, it's helped a lot of people in the US like get jobs, get paid. Like it's also, you know, bringing a lot of joy. I do think social media is like, you know, it's a whole new beast, but I find it really interesting. I really don't know why there's so much misinformation about it. And at the end of the day, I just want, you know, people to be happy. And obviously it's difficult because I understand both sides. I will say I'm leaning more towards keeping TikTok, obviously, because I worked there, and I just think that they've been very transparent. But maybe they're seeing something that I didn't at like inside of the company. But yeah, I get why they're scared. Cyber warfare is a big deal. But this is the other fun kicker. Our data is already being collected and sold to data brokers, and data brokers don't really have regulations on who they sell it to. So if they really were concerned about our data, then wouldn't they start regulating what the data brokers sell or who the data brokers sell to?
So that's the problem to go after.
Yeah. Right. In my personal opinion.
Right.
But I think the data brokers are making the US a lot of money. So I don't know if they're going to be addressing. And to be fair, I don't know how much money the US, I don't even know if they're making money, but I'm assuming like why else would the US be okay with, you know, collecting all this data?
Like any other commodity, it's making people money somewhere along the line. And people don't want to know the dirty parts of what was involved to make that dividend.
Yeah, because data brokers sell the data. So the data brokers are they're making tons of money. I just don't know where that money is going, or if it's like funding, you know, people in the office. Who knows? I don't know.
Well,
so it's interesting. I agree with both sides. It's just, it's a very, I think there's other ways to solve a problem.
It's not addressing the core systemic issue. It's just dealing with all this stuff on the side.
Yeah. In my opinion. Yeah.
Well, I don't know enough about it to have an opinion. I do think that at your point, there's a core issue that needs to be addressed. I think that one of the main issues is the influence and money and power that corporations are having rather than government, because governments can be held accountable and corporations cannot be. And right. this overwhelming amount of reliance of government on corporations to do the right thing is we are only lucky right now because there are a good portion of large companies that are at least making somewhat of an effort or an appearance of effort to be doing the right thing. But that's only because a few key CEOs want to make a statement about values. Right. And so, you know, if that's Tim Cook at Apple saying these are our values and this is what we'll do to make that happen, it sounds good. If it's Meta and Zuckerberg saying we have to look this way and look this way to do this way, great. For TikTok to have an international component and not necessarily have a US driven, you know, top down, or at least from the outside looking in, that scares people. But the problem is the fact that they were relying on these corporations to do the right thing and they're not accountable. They're only accountable to their boards, and the boards are the ones that are deciding whether they're making money. And so at the end of the day, they need to be able to make more money.
Well, yeah. And then it's like, who do you trust? Cause also, I mean, Meta is actually really good at like explaining all the data collect and all this other stuff. And then it's like, okay, so is TikTok, but like, clearly you don't trust TikTok, but like you're questioning TikTok, but are you questioning Meta too? I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
No, that's so, the case. But yeah, at the end of the day, if we were having these conversations about, I mean, if we removed, let's talk about, these are top companies, right?
Right.
These top companies are so involved in our data as a commodity and us, it's intertwined into our lives and sometimes it's intertwined into our successes and how much money we make. But this is a recent thing because the largest companies before all this were, you know, oil and gas, or like, I think like Coke, Pepsi, like these types of like products where it's like, do we want the products anymore? They weren't necessarily affecting our personal lives, if that makes any sense. Or at least it didn't seem that way. I mean, I could have that wrong, but Coke's private recipe was not that big of it. I mean, it's a big deal to them, but no one else really cared that much.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me wrap it with some, and I know we need to wrap this up, so I want to give you this last thing. We have a lightning round of questions. Are you ready to do the lightning round?
Sure.
Okay, so here, lightning round of questions, and we'll wrap this up. Here we go. Number one. Texting or talking?
Talking.
Favorite day of the week?
All of them.
Okay. Favorite day of the week. Let's go. Pick a day.
Monday.
Well, that's when you go to the club at 6 a.m. Favorite city in the U.S. Favorite city in the U.S. besides the one you live in?
Man, I was going to say Miami. Fine. I'll have to say Los Angeles.
Okay. Nickname your parents used to call you?
Buns.
Buns?
My dad used to call me Buns.
Does. The last song that you specifically like went into your music player, searched for, and hit play on? Like, you were like, I want to listen to this song.
It was a Christian song that I found on Instagram. I don't even know what the name is.
A Christian song.
Like a faith-based.
Oh, God, a faith-based musician.
I was journaling this morning during my Bible study, and that's what I came up with. But honestly, I love music, so any song, really.
Would you rather be able to speak every language in the world or be able to talk to animals?
Every language.
Favorite holiday?
Easter.
How long does it take for you to get ready in the morning?
20 minutes.
Whoa. Scale of 1 to 10. How good of a driver are you?
I'm actually good. I know people think that they're good, but I'm good. I'm an 8.5.
8.5. Fill in the blank. Taylor Swift is?
I was going to say woof.
That was enough. You did it. Wow. Okay. Coming in strong. We'll send the Swifties your address and see what they do.
No, don't send them. No, she's great. She's an excellent business person. I will say that. Amazing business person.
At what age do you want to retire?
I'm already retired, in my opinion.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Invisibility or super strength?
Hmm. Let's say invisibility. I don't know. Neither of them.
Is it wrong for a vegetarian to eat animal crackers?
No.
Okay.
I love animal crackers. I'm not a vegetarian, but yeah.
All right. Well, those are all the things that I wanted to ask you.
What do you think? Is it wrong for a vegetarian to eat animal?
No, I just like the response of people when they get asked the question because they think really hard about it word by word. And then they're like, oh, wait a minute. No, I don't know.
I literally love animal. Now I want them. Can you still buy them?
Yeah, you can. You can. I think they come in different forms now. It's not the traditional. I think back in the day when it was like in the circus animal box, like
yeah.
I think that was wrong because it was like caged animals in a circus train. Like that would, I think the idea of circus animals is wrong, but not animal crackers.
Yeah, no, they're good. They're good. I mean, I think the Miami like aquarium shut down recently because they were not treating their animals correctly. That's sad. Anyways, completely separate topic.
That's not good. Whole other topic. Well, again, thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it. It was awesome.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, Paul.
All right. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Welcome back, everybody. I say this every time, Paul, but thank you for bringing yet another really awesome episode with a really cool alumni.
Yeah.
Just a great, great conversation and a great, great thing to learn. I guess, do you know a lot about cybersecurity, or is a lot of what you were talking about with Caitlin things that were pretty new to you?
Yes. I don't know. I mean, I know a decent amount, and that's really just because of my involvement here at the school. People can go back into our archive and see we have faculty interviews with some of the leading faculty in cybersecurity. So I've had a number of different conversations around cybersecurity, digital forensics, all the different analytics involved in cybersecurity. Also, you can't help but avoid reading about cybersecurity breaches mm-hmm. all the time. And something that we refer to in the conversation is the clickbait stuff that happens in cybersecurity. And it's kind of a, I don't want to say it's a passion. It's a weird, puzzling interest of mine on how to create passwords and what, which we talked about a little bit, and what I do specifically for passwords, which I think is really cool. It's not unique, but also how you would then remember them and who keeps track of them and mm-hmm. who you trust and who you don't trust, which is fascinating because I'm never going to be able to convince somebody to trust a certain company versus someone else telling me to trust another company. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know. It's interesting to me, but I don't know a thing about it. I do. I am fascinated by all of the easy leaks that come into play. And I think it was around the time of this, recording, USC, we have to go through kind of a training all the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's annually mm-hmm. on protecting data. And I think I might've just finished that training again, which is like a refresher on all the different ways like you can mess mm-hmm. up and how many ways I'm like paranoid about what we're putting out into the digital world, given how much we send emails, et cetera. And how email is probably the most common thing hacked. So I don't know. Are you, is this a thing for you? Are you just like trying to ignore it? Cause it's fascinating to me, but also I also don't want to know all the details.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably in that camp where I don't need to know all the details, but I did have the chance to look through some of Caitlin's social media platforms and listening to some of her videos. Like I really like the angle that she takes where it's really kind of dim. I'm going to mispronounce this for some reason.
Demonstrative?
Yeah, yeah. Or just like how simply she explains things yes. for people, specifically for Gen Z. Like I really like that short video format. And I like the level of detail that she gives. She explains like, this is what you need to know. This is what you should be aware of. But without getting into all of the nitty gritty technical aspects that I feel like some people might throw out if they're trying to explain cybersecurity. So I really, really like what she's doing. And I'm really excited that you brought it to the podcast.
Are you, this is a tangential conversation to what we were just talking about, not to throw it back to that word, but it's a tangential conversation about the demonstrative methods of social media, quick cuts. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it a little bit in the conversation, but that format of like, a person talking into their phone and it's like, you know, it's like super energetic and whatever. And I get it and I understand it, but mm-hmm. is that something that actually resonates? Like, cause to me, I'm like, I just constantly see it as, and I think Caitlin does a great job. Don't be wrong. It's not about Caitlin, but all the other things that are out there, like all these quote unquote mm-hmm. social media influencers, like I'm going to show you how to, you know, cook this item. I'm going to show you how to like, save these herbs. And it's just like, okay, this is a little too much for me. It turns me off a little bit. Is that just me being grumpy mm-hmm. old man?
That's actually a good question. I wonder whether it's so popular because it's what other people are doing or because there's some psychological backing that says like, this is what people, particularly Gen Z people, are wanting to consume.
Admittedly, it's hard to click past it mm-hmm. because it's so fast moving. But it's also just, I don't know, it's like saccharinated. Like it's just, it's so saturated with not Caitlin stuff. But some of these other things are just so saturated with seemingly demonstrative, energy, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. this idea of performative energy. And like, they're like in the camera's face doing all these things. And I'm like, can we just slow down? Like, can we just like tone this down a little bit? Cause I always think about, whenever I see these elements, whether it's like an influencer on like Reels or TikTok ideas, or even the ideas of things that you see on YouTube, all I can ever imagine, and this is just likely where my head goes, is like creating parodies of these accounts. Like all I want to do is make versions of this that are purely tongue in cheek, but like dramatically go wrong somewhere along the way. But I don't have the patience to do those types of things.
Yeah. And I think videos in that sort of a format really places an emphasis on the creator as well as the content. Mm. So I know like two different people could be doing the same video on paper, but just like the combination of their voice, their attitude, their intonation, I feel like that can dictate whether I like it or not.
Right.
If that makes sense. So that is an interesting phenomenon.
It's a thin margin of success mm-hmm. of like, this is good. This is too much.
Yes. And I know I talk about this with my boyfriend sometimes, but there are a lot of cooking videos that I'll watch, like similar mm-hmm. to what you were saying on Instagram Reels. And he like, for the most part, like really dislikes a lot of the voices of like these content creators. And he's just like, oh my gosh, like why is it about them? Like, why are they talking? Like, I just want to see the cooking. But there are a couple different creators where he's like, actually, like, this is interesting. Like, this person seems cool. So I wonder like all the things that go into what makes that person seem cool.
Yeah, that's the thing. I can't really put my finger on it. Because I also mm-hmm. think about it from when we talk about, you know, with other students, when we talk about like how we can create more content to show off what life is like at the Viterbi School, mm-hmm. like how much do we lean into that, and where does it lose authenticity? Because that's something that mm-hmm. we have a lot of conversations about with you and your peers about showing life off at the school but never losing authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for some people, this is a really interesting turn of our conversation. Because it's like, are some people incapable of being super authentic as soon as there's a phone that's thrown in front of their face? Like,
well, now you're just getting philosophical.
Yeah. As soon as it's your job to vlog, like, do you lose authenticity or is it so more natural for some people?
This is completely unrelated. I didn't even know we were going to talk about this, but I've had like lots of thoughts lately about what we're going to do next year. And I have a bunch of pitches to the students. And like, to me, there's a ton of YouTube videos that I think are super fun and super authentic, but are not this like, you know, let me give you the top 10 reasons why you want to come to USA. Like, I hate that stuff. Like, and I don't mm-hmm. think it's helpful to anybody, but there's these other videos that like a lot of media companies do, like GQ does a series set. Vanity Fair does a bunch of different things. Wired does a bunch of these, like the Wired autocomplete interview. I think that is super fun. Cause it's like, have you seen the autocomplete interviews?
I don't think so.
So it's like, what's the easiest way to describe it? It's a celebrity talking about a movie that's coming out. And let's say, like pick a celebrity. Let's say it's Ben Affleck. And it's like the Ben Affleck, Wired autocomplete interview. And he has this little printout that they made for him, and it's a Google search bar.
Oh, I have seen this.
And it says, is Ben Affleck? And he reads it like, is Ben Affleck in this movie? And then it spawns a story, or it creates a story from them about whatever that topic is. Like, did Ben Affleck, date J-Lo, all these different questions, and it just goes on and on and on. Is Ben Affleck and Matt Damon really best friends? And then they tell the story of that whole thing, and it just goes on and on and on. And so that would be kind of fun to do, like, is USC, and then we would go through and see what types of top questions, because from autocomplete, it's based on, like, is Ben Affleck, and then all the autocomplete answers. So we would do those types of questions. Is USC Viterbi? What does USC Viterbi? Like, we come up with those different things, and then we have a couple students, like, answer those questions and have fun with it. And then the other one is GQ does this one I just discovered about, like, top 10 essentials. Like, these are the things I can't live without. And, like, Caleb Williams has one. A couple different athletes have them. And it's just things that they love. And so, like, Caleb's got his Beats, and he talks about why he loves his Beats. He talks about, like, his favorite snack. And we could, we can grab USC Viterbi students to talk about, like, your top 10 essentials. Like, what's your day-to-day, like, oh, this is my sweatshirt, I wear this every day, this is my good luck charm for tests, or, you know, here's my phone, here's my Google calendar, here's my favorite snack, it's these Takis, like, all these different stuff that happens. I think it'd be super cool and enlightening to get into student lives.
Yeah, no, I love these ideas. And I think, honestly, this, like, as a video would work, but then also taking that audio, I feel like that would also be a fun podcast, because you don't need to see. Also, for curiosity, I looked up, is USC Viterbi? And the autocomplete, do you know what the first one is?
No, I haven't looked at it.
Is USC Viterbi good?
Exactly, right? Like, this is what people are searching for. Like, you know what? Let the internet tell me whether something's good.
Yeah. Wait, that's funny. Okay, when I click on it, what comes up? US News and World Report, Quora, Reddit. Yeah.
Right. Right, awesome. You're right. The funny part about those is that all of that data and inquiry and questions, the majority of them are coming from prospective graduate students that are mostly international. Because the volume of inquiries into Reddit and Quora and all that other stuff are almost all international graduate students. So online content is actually not that helpful on public forums such as that to our prospective undergraduates.
Well, there you have. That's our first part of the story with the autocomplete video right there.
Well, no, we don't even have to describe the results online. It's just that this is what people are searching for. So let's have a conversation about it.
No, there's an interesting narrative about that too. That interesting start. Like, who is it who's looking things up online? Who is it who's putting out that content? You know, and like, where do you actually find good content to answer the question? Like, is it good?
Yeah. No. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating.
Yeah, so stay tuned, everybody, until next year. And next year we'll get back to you. Is USC Viterbi good?
Jury's still out. Jury is still out.
Jury's out.
Did you know? I don't know if we've had to talk about this. Did you know that our podcast is now on YouTube?
No, I did not.
Yes.
I feel like I should though.
Yes. I did it myself, and I got it all running. But basically our podcast feeds directly into YouTube as well. And so it is an opportunity for people to listen to our content on YouTube if that's where they get their content. The cool news is that when people are searching things inside of YouTube, because that's becoming more and more a common thing, the results of 300 and something episodes of our podcast and all the text in the descriptions are being searched and indexed and then resulting in plays. Which is very
exciting.
Cool.
Exciting.
Right? Because in the last, like, I don't know, week or so, we've already had hundreds and hundreds of listens across our entire archive.
Very fun. Well, also exciting news for the archive. There are some people working behind the scenes on updating the episode tagging and numbering.
Yes.
So there might be some new podcast playlists.
Yes. We should talk offline about that and make sure that we've got some consistency there. Cause I don't know if you, maybe there's, I caught it at a weird moment. There was not consistencies, but maybe you caught it.
It's in progress. We'll talk about it.
I looked at him like, that's not a tag.
Yeah. It was on track. And then I think the train blew up and it's all over the place.
I picked up one and I was like, One of the tags was, I don't remember, but it was like, fun stuff to do in LA. I'm like, that's not a tag. Like,
yeah,
we have a list. We have a database.
There's a library. There's a database somewhere, but
I'm glad you're aware of it. Cause it was something super, super funny to me. I was like, I don't see that.
Mm-hmm. And I will have a playlist of things that are specifically super, super fun things to do in LA. Everybody has to like write this out for like 100 episodes.
Right, right. Well, you know, I think we have a category similar to that, but the point is like writing them on the fly like that doesn't help the database.
I think the category is something like fun.
Sure.
Like F-U-N or like LA.
Right. So whatever it's going to be. It's going to be fine. Are you in LA right now?
I am in LA. Yes.
I never know where you are. So that's why I have to ask. Every Friday you're in a different part of the country.
Yeah. I was in New York last weekend.
Cool.
LA this weekend though. I have a lot of grad picks that I'm doing and we have the open house on Sunday. So
that's right. Open house. It's going to be fun. Ooh. Oh my gosh. Thousands and thousands of people are registered.
Yeah, I actually originally had a grad photo session that night. And I told them, I was like, you guys, you don't want to do it on that Sunday. There will be people from everywhere on campus.
probably at Golden Hour, though, it's probably dwindled down. But you're right. There's a lot of stuff.
And like tents and everything set up. Like that just makes it more difficult. And also, do I really want to work like a 12-hour day?
Especially if you've done this whole day, you don't want to do that. So that's true.
My social battery is kaput.
Social battery. Got to go recharge the social bats.
Yeah. Last night I had a beautiful introvert night. I spoke to no one after 5 p.m. It was glorious.
I wanted to have that. I couldn't have that. It was my daughter's STEM night at school. And so it was fun. It's just, I was at a point where I'm like, I don't want to talk to anybody. And so I'm sure I came off as like super grumpy because I just, everyone's like, hey, what's going on? Hey, how are you? I'm like, I don't want to talk about anything. Hey, how's work? Is admission crazy right now? Yes, it is. I don't want to talk about it. It's in every world. And it's getting closer and closer to my personal life because now neighbors are being admitted.
Oh.
And
oh,
so like one of our close friends, their neighbor's being admitted. I'm like, it is now within they've infiltrated my life.
The neighborhood.
Oh my gosh, which is fine. I'm happy to help. But also I'm like, I need some sort of refuge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, but enough about me being grumpy old man as usual. I'm always talking about how I'm grumpy.
It's okay. My mom told me today that I sounded very grumpy on the phone, which I was grumpy with her. So she was like, did you just call me to complain? I was like, I wasn't planning on it.
Isn't that kind of the point of moms? They're just supposed to be the listening.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we have to figure out if we're recording next week, just a heads up, look at my calendar now because I don't think I can do it unless we're doing it like.
Awesome. Do we want to keep this on the podcast too?
Yeah, you're talking to me now and I'm like, oh, we could save time. We could stop recording. But since we're here, take a look at my calendar. Friday's tight and Friday's the only day. So it might be you go without me. So this is a heads up. I might not be on next week's episode.
Okay. Yeah. Toss up. Everybody listen in next week.
At this point, we're an open book. Let's just tell them everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything behind the scenes. Everything
we're talking about database tagging. We're talking about the feeds going to YouTube. We're talking about listener stats. We're talking about all this stuff. It's a professional organization here.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. It's funny. I actually, on Wednesday, when I was with admitted students, we were sitting down at lunch and I asked them like, what should we do like as a podcast episode? Like, what would you guys want to listen to?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was
told. And they're like, what? You have a podcast? That sounds horrible.
Yeah, kind of. And then they were like, somebody like took a second, thought about it, and then turned to me and was like, you and Paul have nice voices. You should do ASMR. And I was like, I don't know about that one.
But then what would we talk about?
I feel like every time, like once a season, it comes up, an ASMR episode. And
it totally does. It's come up a lot. I remember getting a pitch from one of your peers that we should do Viterbi ASMR. And I'm like, what the hell would it be?
I'll leave that for you guys next year. Enjoy that one. Maybe that could be a YouTube video too.
That's actually, it might be better as a YouTube video because we can go get sounds of labs and sounds of campus.
Oh,
and just have static video. Like, what if we went to like the machine shop and they were doing like laser cutting? Or what if we were at...
This just turned into a great idea, actually.
Right? I mean, what if we got the mic in there in the
fountain?
Got the fountain? That would be amazing. You can get the car in the... Oh my God, why am I blanking? Why am I blanking on the room?
The makerspace?
Yeah, no. Yes, the makerspace, but the specific room where we get it up to full speed. I'm blanking on the name of the space.
Can't help you out there.
The room that's out, the building that was built, the small little room that was built outside so that you can get it in there for testing. But basically the car goes up to full rev in there. And that would be interesting to get the mic in there to hear that.
Oh, I could do like RPL with the...
RPL would be great.
Oh yeah. Next year. We're just making all the content for the next year. This is
we're lining up everything.
Intro, outro right now.
Yeah. We're lining up everything. We got the autocomplete interviews. We got the GQ 10 essentials. We got the ASMR videos of Around Viterbi. Just set up a microphone next to my keyboard and listen to me type. Mm-hmm. Cause that's basically my whole job.
90% of the day.
Just typing, replying to emails saying, no, you can't do that. No,
I feel like we would catch some like sighs or like some grumpy exclamations.
right before this podcast, there was one like, ah, no, don't do that. No, sorry. Multiple things that are in my inbox right now where I sighed and I'm like, I need to come back to that. I can't answer that with my state. Anyway, I think we adequately bantered in a witty way. I don't know if there's anything else. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that was perfect. I think we just hold off until next week. Tell everybody to come and visit us.
Yes. Come and visit. If you're a high school junior or a sophomore, come visit for real. We've got info sessions, Viterbi visit experiences, or visit Viterbi experiences, I think is what they're called. Most Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays throughout the summer. Right now we have May, June, and July up and available to schedule. Book now. Spots will go fast. They will fill. And so if you are, I don't know if anyone's even listening at this point, we're all the way through the end of the episode. we'll have to do some dynamic content for this, throw it in. But anyways, get booked at viterbiadmission.usc.edu/events. But I got nothing. Thanks, y'all.
Right. Have a lovely week, everyone, or whenever you're listening this. Have a nice day.
All right. Bye.